The Pasha, we deal with Machlaikis, where the Torah forbids us to be involved in a Machlaikis. But, of course, the truth is not every Machlaikis is problematic. Sometimes arguing is good. And, you know, as Jews, we're very opinionated people, and we like to state our opinion and argue for our opinion. And sometimes that's good. I mean, if you go into a base medrash and it's all quiet and everybody's just sitting learning quietly, it's not. That's not the way you're supposed to learn. The way you're supposed to learn is, this is the way I feel about the Gemara, this is the way I understand the Gemara, and I'm going to fight for my opinion. And I'm going to argue with my chavusa with my opinion. I'm going to have a machlekes. That's the way we learn. If you give a shir and the audience participates and starts arguing with you, so that's the type of shir that you like to give. So,
I don't agree with that.
What? Thank you. So machlekes is good sometimes. So machlekes is bad when it's a machlekes like Korach, where the Mishnah says it's a machlekes shaloi l'shem shemayim, which means it's not a machlekes that I'm trying to reach the truth. Our goal is not to reach the truth. Our goal is to get what we want and to get what we're trying to get. But when the machlekes is l'shem shemayim, ultimately the goal is to reach the truth. So that's actually a positive machlekes. That's a type of machlekes which we should have, and we should state our opinions. And if we feel something's not correct, we should say it. We should point it out. Just it has to be a machlekes l'shem shemayim, trying to reach the emes. That's ultimately the goal of the people who are participating in the machlekes. That's why a famous diak in the Mishnah of Schwab says, and others says, the Mishnah says, "Ezehu machlekes shaloi l'shem shemayim is koyach va'adosai." Ezehu machlekes l'shem shemayim, that is Shammai and Hillel. So when it's Shammai and Hillel, it says the two participants in the machlokes, Shammai on one side, Hillel on the other side. When it says koyach, it should also say a machlokes koyach v'moshe. It doesn't say that it says koyach va'adosai, because Korach really wasn't interested in hearing what Moshe said. Korach is only listening to himself. So there's no dialogue. There's no two people involved in the machlekes. There's just one person. Korach talking to himself, not willing to hear, because that's a machlekes. You're not seeking the truth. You're just trying to get your ways. That's a machlekes which we're not allowed to be involved in. A machlekes to seek the truth. That's positive. That's a machlekes to shame shemaim. I saw a friend brought a story that there was a person who used to come every morning to pick up his newspaper at 7 a.m. And when he picked up the newspaper, he felt that somebody had read the paper before him. Someone was coming to his front steps and reading the paper before he got it. So one day he decided to catch the person, so he hides early in the morning, and he sees his neighbor comes at 6 a.m., and his neighbor goes and reads the paper and puts it back. So he confronts his neighbor. "What are you doing? You're stealing my newspaper." And the neighbor says, "What's your problem? I get up at 6, I read the paper, I put it back for you at 7 o'clock, so you get up at 7, and you get the paper, so why would you care if I read the paper at 6? Now, this person's getting very upset. "What do you mean? You're stealing my newspaper. What right do you have to steal my paper?" And his neighbor says, "That's me to Sodom, to go ahead and not allow me to read the newspaper between 6 and 7 when it doesn't cost you anything." Okay, so this guy doesn't know what to do. You know, on the one hand, he's going to resent his neighbor the whole time if his neighbor's going to go ahead and read the paper. On the other hand, if he tells him no, his neighbor doesn't get it. And his neighbor looks at him. As being the weirdo, that why wouldn't you let me read the paper? So he goes to his Rav and he asks his Rav what to do. So his Rav says that the only solution over here in your dilemma is that you have to buy your neighbor a subscription to the newspaper too. That way he'll have the paper. So he says, "Well, I got to pay to buy my neighbor a subscription? That's crazy." says, well, that's the only way he'll get out of it. Get him a subscription. So the guy actually listened, and he paid for a subscription. And at the end of the year, he said, you know, that was actually very good advice, because now I get my paper without having somebody read it. I get along with my neighbor. I'm fine with my neighbor. And it just cost me a subscription. How much did it end up costing me to not get into a fight? So sometimes we have to be willing to pay money to avoid getting into a machlekes. And this is actually what the Chafetz Chaim says. The Chafetz Chaim says, just like we all accept that to eat kosher food, we have to pay more money, and to keep Pesach, we have to pay more money, and for simply for tuition, we have to pay more money. So we should be willing to pay more money also to avoid getting into a machlekes. Shalom is also a mitzvah, and if we have to set aside money for that, if it costs us money, it's money well spent.
Couldn't he just have let him
read
his paper?
No, because I can't. He resented that. He wouldn't be able to do it without resenting it. Okay, so...
Is it stealing?
If the person's makbid, it's stealing. If not, it's kofin, I'll need to sit down. But if it's makbid, I can stop you from doing it.
But it's also bear in mind, also this guy's coming at his personal property, so say that's kofin midas, so sounds
like... Well, it's then nana v'zelo chasin. I'm not hurting you if I take the paper and look at it, but I could stop you from doing it. But, you know, my neighbor will look at me as a jerk, and I'm looking at him as a jerk, so that was a smart advice to do. That what? Zen and Abzalachasa, yeah. Okay, at the end, after the Pasha, so Korach and Dasan and Vavim, they challenge Moshe Rabbeinu, and Hashem creates a miracle to show that Moshe Rabbeinu was correct, that he is a shliach from Hashem. So the people, the family of Korach, they get swallowed by the ground. The ground opens up and swallows them. The 250 people who bought the Ketores, a fire comes down from heaven and burns them up. It seems pretty convincing that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that was correct. He had appointed Aaron. It wasn't just favoritism that he gave it to his brother Aaron. He had a shlichus from Hashem to appoint the Levim to be the ones serving in the Mishkan. It seems that Hashem pretty much gave a very, very strong sign. But after the whole story, Klal Yisrael still come and gang up against Moshe Rabbeinu, and they tell Moshe Rabbeinu, Atem Hamisem Es Am Hashem, you caused the death of the nation of Hashem, and they blame Moshe Rabbeinu for what happened. And how can you blame Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu did everything correct. So the Ramban explains that what they were saying is that we are convinced that Aaron is the Kohen, because you see that Aaron's was the only one whose Ketores was accepted, but we're not convinced that the Levium were correctly chosen. Really, maybe it shouldn't be the Levium, maybe it should be the Bechorim who get to serve in the Mishkan, not the Levium. There was no sign that the Levium were chosen, and therefore they're angry at Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu gave them the Ketores, which is really the job of Aaron. And by doing Aaron's job, they were punished. But had they challenged the Levium, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was wrong to pick the Levium. So after all those signs, they still weren't convinced that Moshe Rabbeinu was correct. And Ibn Ezra takes it even further. Ibn Ezra says that they didn't believe in anything. They thought that Korach was still correct. Hashem had sent a pretty clear sign. So he says maybe that was just the tefillos of Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem accepted Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillos, al tefen al milchasam, but that's just because Hashem loves Moshe Rabbeinu. But really, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was still not correct in appointing Aaron or in appointing the Levium. They weren't convinced of the sign, and therefore they ganged up against Moshe Rabbeinu, which is fascinating that you can have a very, very clear, obvious miracle, and people can still say that I don't believe. We think that if we would witness a clear miracles, we would certainly believe. No question. We don't see any miracles. That's why we have sometimes difficulties in Emunah. But if we would have clear miracles, no question, we would believe. But we see that there's always going to be questions. You can always question and discount things that you see. Even if you see a very clear sign, you can always find a way of questioning it and discounting it. And on the other hand, if your person really wants to look, he can really see messages all the time. Even today, a person could see messages. So Hashem is never going to send something that's so conclusive that you won't be able to question it, because then you won't have Bechira. Even at the time of Korach, he sent a sign, but there's still an ability to question it. And we have Bechira to go ahead and question that sign. And therefore, they did question it. And we, on the other hand, sometimes we see signs in our own life, and sometimes we choose to listen to those messages, and sometimes we choose not to listen to those messages. But there's always going to be messages available if somebody chooses to go ahead and listen. You know, Rabbi Akiva, he questioned, can I go at the age of 40 and go and learn or not? And he sees water dripping onto a rock and making a hole in the rock. And he says, hey, that's a message for me, that just like the water can make the hole in the rock, so eventually, if I apply myself, I'll be able to understand the material will go in. So that's the person who's looking to see a message. He sees messages in the world. He doesn't need an open miracle to see the message. And Korach, the people of Korach, they had pretty clear miracles, and they still managed to question that fully believe. Ramosha says it's a very similar idea. The beginning of the Pashat says that they came to Moshe Rabbeinu with a talis which was fully made out of tchelis. And they told Moshe Rabbeinu, a talis which is fully blue, what's the point of putting on another blue string? The whole talis is blue. And the idea is, a blue talis gets us to think of heaven. We're supposed to see the blue, we're supposed to think of heaven, and it reminds us of Yiras Shemayim. So if the talis is white, so they said it makes sense, you need to have one blue string. But if the talis is fully blue, why would you need to have an additional blue string? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, the halacha is you need an additional blue string. So Moshe explains, what's the reason you need an additional blue string? So Moshe says that if you take a person has no emuna at all, and you show him a gigantic miracle, okay, so he has no choice to believe. Okay, that miracle happened, I have to believe there's a God. But it's not really a deep understanding and a deep emuna. It's a surface emuna. Okay, I saw the miracle, so I believe it, but I can still say, you know what, Hashem could do this, but maybe he can't do that. You know, Hashem could take us out of Mitzrayim, they said in last week's Pasha, but who said he can bring us into Eretz Yisrael and fight the 31, well, it seems if he can split the sea, he can probably take you into Eretz Yisrael. And no, they questioned that he can split the sea, but who said he can take us into Eretz Yisrael? So he says a miracle is not a deep understanding in something. It's a very shallow understanding. How do you understand something deeply? So, you know, if you want to teach someone mathematics, let's say, you start when the kid's 5, you teach them 1 + 1 = 2, then you start teaching them a little bit more difficult math, and then you teach them algebra. And as they go along, they start learning math. But if you start teaching someone math at age 20, they've never learned math, and you start teaching them at age 20, you would think, well, 10 years of stuff is pretty simple. It's such a basic stuff. So I can teach them at age 20. It doesn't work. The kids don't, you can't start learning something at age 20 because you're trying to learn it all at once instead of a gradual learning slowly over time. That's why sometimes in Eretz Yisrael right now, when you have boys who went to yeshiva, had no secular education at all, and they tried to go to a college, and they have to get these pre-courses to get a secular education, it's extremely difficult, because if they haven't even had the basics of it, to try teaching in 6 months or 3 months something which was taught over 10, 15 years doesn't really work. So Moshe says the way you teach emunah is you start slowly when the child's 5 years old, and you teach a little bit of emunah, and you teach the child to say brachas, and you teach the child to recognize Hashem, and slowly over time that really penetrates, and that becomes a deep understanding of something. But just to see a miracle is a very shallow understanding. You'll believe in the miracle, but you won't be able to really, really know it and extrapolate to other areas. And that's why he says, a talis shekulei tcheles is like an in-your-face emuna. So that's very, very nice, but that's not an in-depth understanding. A string is small. I'll teach you Amunah slowly. Start when the kid's young, and slowly over time, over the 10, 15 years, you teaching Amunah, that really becomes a deep, full understanding of something. Okay, one final point. So what was the final proof that Moshe Rabbeinu was correct, that Aaron was supposed to be chosen, or Shevet Levi, like the Ramban says, was supposed to be chosen? So the final proof was all the Shvatim gave their sticks, and they put all the sticks into the Mishkan, and Aaron's stick flowered, and all the other sticks did not flower. So 2 points about the sticks. Why is that a better proof than the ground opening up and fire coming out? Much more dramatic proofs. The ground opening up and fire coming out than the stick flowering. So why would we say that the stick's flowering is a better proof than the ground opening up? So, say Chassidus Shabshat, Rav Leibel Eger says, when you try say something in a positive way, it's much stronger than saying something in a negative way with punishments and with threats. So punishments and threats, ground opening up and fire, is less convincing when a person tries to show something positive. Look what's happening. It's flowering. Look what Aaron is becoming. Look who Aaron is. Look who the Levim are. Look why they deserve to get what they get. I saw the same idea from Rabbi Lau. He says that if you say it with flowers, that normally works. So you do it in a nice way, in a positive way. You show what a person could become instead of threatening a person. It's much more effective way of doing it. And therefore, there was the sticks, the sort of the positive, to show what Aaron is. He's growing, he's flowering, the growth of Aaron. That's why Aaron and the Levim deserved to get what they got, was stronger than the threats which they had. One final point. It says in the end, by the sticks, it says that Aaron's stick, Hashem said, should be kept in the Mishkan should be kept in the Mishkan as a proof that Aaron was chosen. It says in the end, Vayikru ish matehu. All the other Nesiim took back their stick too. That's so irrelevant. Why does the Torah tell us that all the other Nevi'im took back this? They were the losers. Their stick, nothing happened to it. All the 12 of them put their stick in the Mishkan. Aaron's stick flowered and grew nuts. All the other sticks, nothing happened to them. Okay, so the sticks was that's like a losing lottery ticket. So what do you do with a losing lottery ticket? You throw it out. So, of course, they took it out of the Mishkan. What's the point of the Torah saying each one took back their stick? The other 11 to see him also took back their stick. So a beautiful idea from Aznaim Latoira. He says like this. He says, it was important that the other Shvatim keep their stick too. Because now it was decided the Levim, they were the Shevet for dedicating themselves to Torah and Avodas Hashem. The other Shvatim have a different role. So now the other, they're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. These Shvatim are, they're, let's say, businessmen, and they're prospering, and they're working. Hopefully they're spending some time learning too. But their role is, let's say, to have a regular life. And you have the Levim. They're poor, and they need to be supported by the community. They're supported by the matanos, which we give them. But the Levim are dedicating their lives to Avodas Hashem. When we're holding our sticks, we're saying that, remember, one time we wanted to be the Levim. We had a desire to be Levim. Korach maybe was not right because he was picking a role that wasn't for him. But at the end of the day, their motives, their desire was really to serve Hashem. That's what they said. We want to also be the ones who come into the Mishkan and serve Hashem. So they're able to take their sticks and to say that we're successful, we're making money. You see those Levim over there who are dedicating their lives to Hashem. One day we really wanted to be the Levim too. And we have to remember that we recognize that what they're doing is important, and what they're doing is something that we value. So even that's not our role, but that's something which we value, that's something which we actually fought once to become. So their sticks also, their failed sticks also, sends a very, very important message that it reminds them that they had this desire to become Levim, they recognized what's really a true value. Oh. Thank you.